It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to the Sensible Football Podcast. This is Tariq joining you, still in London, with Vishal, who's in Bangalore,
yeah.
And Karan in Delhi. Hey guys.
Hello.
Hey guys.
Okay, so firstly, has everybody gotten their heart checkup done after that round of 16?
I'm sleep deprived.
I've just been catching up on sleep, not engaging with people, not looking at anything that could raise my heartbeat again. So I'm disengaged.
And has anybody's smartwatch warned you against impending disaster because of elevated heartbeat levels? Because there seem to be cases of these around the world. And it has been, guys, a most dramatic round of 16, both in terms of quality and in terms of results.
Absolutely.
No question about it.
All right, so what we will do is the usual, which is run through the results quickly and then try to preview all the four quarterfinals. So, of course, the entire series of games was bookended by two of the most dramatic, and we begin with the most dramatic one, which was France 4, Argentina 3. Vishal, quite simply, a spectacular game on many levels, but at the same time, I mean, really. You wanted to say was,
I told you so.
Yeah.
Like, while this, I think this is one of those games where the scoreline is telling you a far closer story than it really was. I think France really did dominate this game, outplayed Argentina in almost every department of the game. Argentina scored one world-class goal and one freak goal, and then Sergio Aguero's final goal. But I think France deserving winners. Argentina had no answers to one. France's midfield. And also, of course, Mbappe, Argentina were too old and were literally too old to keep up with the 19-year-old. So I think France really made it far more difficult than it should have been, but France had a comfortable one at this.
All right. And Kylian Mbappe might not have been born to remember it, but at the 1998 World Cup, Argentina suffered sort of a similar fate against the Netherlands.
Yes.
Done in by a wonder goal from
by Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp himself. And of course, at that time, they had a very brilliant playmaker as well, which is Ariel Ortega.
Yeah, those were the days when Bergkamp used to fly around.
World Cup. So the parallels there. And we thought that we had enough drama for that day. But in came game number two. Karan, your thoughts on Croatia Denmark?
It started off like a house on fire with both goals being scored in about, what was it, 4 minutes, and then after that, 2 minutes in fact.
Inside the first 2 minutes, yes.
Literally, I mean, probably a lot of people might have still been, you know, paying their tabs in the local pubs while they scored those goals. But I think after that, it kind of just settled. And, Croatia made it a lot more difficult for themselves than it should have been. But having said that, Denmark were extremely, extremely, disciplined and quite tough in their defense. So, it was quite breathtaking at times.
It was a typical knockout game, right, where both teams just did not wanted to be, I mean, rather wanted to make sure that they did not get knocked out. And that really took precedence over going out and all out and trying to win the game, where they said, okay, let's wait for the other team to make the mistake, which is where it really played out. So I think knockout football at its pressure best, it was Croatia and Denmark who did not want to, you know, make the move and did not want to be proactive about it.
Yeah, but Croatia definitely a better side than what they put out that night.
Absolutely.
And what they did was almost put themselves in a position where they could have gone out.
Whew.
With the slightest of luck here or there. And speaking of could have gone out with the slightest of luck here or there, the game preceding this Croatia-Denmark game actually had that scenario play out, because Spain completely, well, not exactly putting themselves into that position in terms of not finishing, but putting themselves into, dare I say, the Russian roulette of the penalty shootout. And, well,
guess
who the Russians
I really
won.
Think Yeah, but I really think somebody lied to Spain, telling them that passes win matches. I really think somebody told them that, you know what, the more you pass, the easier it is to win. But I think they played into Russia, like if I were Russia, Russia pretty much figured out what Spain were going to do throughout the game and let them make their 1,000 passes, which was a record, by the way. But what did the 1,000 passes lead to?
One own goal.
13 touches in the penalty box. That is atrocious.
Yeah, 1,000 passes and they still needed a Russian to score the goal.
Yeah, exactly. Russians scored all goals in the game.
And of course, unfortunately, they're not good enough in the penalty shootout, where the Russians, in fact, were amazingly effective. But the game we kind of skipped over after the France-Argentina excitement was the game which probably had the highest amount of quality in this entire round of 16. Uruguay 2, Portugal 1. Uruguay showing that they are a team to reckon with.
Absolutely. I think we called it out in our preview as well, saying that the best defense possibly in the World Cup, and they showed it again, where they pretty much eliminated Ronaldo or Bernardino Silva or anybody who tried to really set up any form of offense for Portugal, and offensively two shots, two goals. That's how efficient, and that's the advantage of having a Suarez and a Cavani. And I think that game was a perfect example of, you know, two great world-class forwards playing the old-school forward-style play, where one of them was falling into the flanks, one of them was holding up the ball at all times. It was just beautiful to watch. I really enjoyed watching them play. It was like a good throwback into the classic centre-forward style of football.
In fact,
there was a good throwback to the classic defensive style of football as well, because once they got the lead, they defended it with all their might and successfully.
Even the quality of goals that Uruguay scored were just spectacular. I mean, the first one, the way they moved the ball around from one end of the field to the other was fantastic. And the second one was just an absolute quality finish. I think the Portugal can have no complaints. They were just completely limited on the night.
Yeah, and anybody still underestimating this team is going to pay the price, and I think France will get there.
we'll talk about that in the preview.
Yeah.
Of course, in the middle, we had another couple of games, not much to write home about along expected lines. Brazil dominating Mexico, winning 2-0. Yeah. Mexico had their chances, but not quite turning up again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, another straight round of 16 exit for Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with Mexico, it was just a case of you know, doing all the running around and, you know, all the quick passes and looking to counter, but then there was absolutely no final ball at all. So there's really nothing much that can be said about it. They were just completely outplayed.
All right, and of course, Sweden versus Switzerland. Tactical battle that was mostly, as we expected, was around disciplined football, was around set pieces, and Sweden got lucky with one deflection, and that was that. That's 1-0. But the game we have to talk about is the game everybody was talking about. The game where Belgium came back from 2-0 down to beat Japan.
Boy, oh boy.
Absolute heartbreak for the Japanese. But what an outstandingly good game, and we thought we could not get a better game than France-Argentina in terms of the dramatics and the quality.
Absolutely.
But this probably outdid them all.
One very, very healthy change of mindset from the mighty Belgian team, because it was good to see, because when the first goal went in or the second goal went in, you could see the typical shoulders falling, the panic setting in. But at some point, one credit to Roberto Martinez, where we spoke about it during the game, where he earned his money by those two substitutions, because he was being outthought and outplayed till then. The two substitutions, which was Fellaini and Charlie Brigger coming on, really changed the game, because at that point, Roberto Martinez clearly said, okay, I cannot beat them on ground. I'm going to start putting the balls in. I'm going to start winning more headers. I'm going to start winning. That's how I'm going to win the game. And two goals from headers is what brought them back into the game. And then the final counter-attack was just a thing of beauty, where Kevin De Bruyne actually came into life only during the 93rd minute of that game, and he created a goal. So, which was a massive game. But I think from Japan's point of view, the clear lack of experience showed, because they just lacked game management. They really needed to know when to sit back and when to not go forward. And that last minute corner was possibly a bad idea, to send 9 out of 11 players forward, and they paid the ultimate price for it.
Yes, and at that point where the game is so tightly poised in terms of 2-2, but maybe Japan were looking for a winner within normal time.
Yep. But, yeah,
and
game management.
Speaking of teams looking for winners within normal time, Colombia and England surely were not two of those teams.
Oh boy, I was 11 seconds away from getting to bed. 11 seconds. I was literally literally clearing the bed and thinking that, okay, fine, it's time for me to, you know, finally call it a night.
But do you guys really remember any game that was this ugly in the near future, be it club level, be it international level?
I don't think so. I think
such an ugly game of football.
It was just a fist fight in the back alley.
Yeah, I really don't know what both teams were attempting. Although, little credit to England because they maintained the cool a little bit. But then again, you're comparing them to Colombia at this point in time, who were atrocious on the night. And the sad part for Colombia is the only 10 minutes they decided to play football, they scored a goal. So they need to sit back and really wonder if their priorities were all wrong. Instead of trying to get England players sent off, or instead of trying to rough them up, should they just have played the game and maybe they'd have had a better result? It was just very, very poor management from the coach, the teams, the players. The attitude was just all wrong. That 90 minutes was horrible.
Yeah. And there's not a Colombia team that needs to do that, because there's enough talent and enough ability for them to play their way to success. So
exactly.
I have absolutely no idea what they were thinking on the night.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what that meant was that there was, initially we had the new confident England playing a pretty good game for first 60 minutes or so.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Playing Colombia like a fiddle in terms of the game plan, working out perfectly how to win the set pieces and eventually winning that penalty, pretty clear penalty at that. There was no doubt that Harry Kane was going to put that away. But having said all of that, and then we had a return to the classic England where we had the equalizer given away. Again, from ground zero, the pub I was watching at, they had been singing "It's Coming Home" for the last 5 minutes, and then suddenly...
Maybe they meant the team coming home early.
Mina decides to head that one in. And it completely became deflated, because I think everybody around there knew that this was a game that was not going to be decided in extra time. Quite plainly, it was going down to penalties. And England had to face their demons. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the quality of the game, regardless of the slices of luck they had in the penalty shootout, you could argue that on the basis of sheer karma, Gareth Southgate deserves something like this. And on the basis of sheer law of averages,
yep,
he needed a break and they got
it. It had to happen sometime.
Absolutely. I think we are very critical of England on most days, but I think this is the first time I'm going to say that England deserved the win on the night. Great penalty shootout. I think Pickford really stood out, and some great penalties were taken as well. Even the penalty that was missed was a good save and not necessarily a poor penalty. So I think it was a great, great win for England. And like you said, it was about time they got a break, because 10 years of not winning a game in knockout, and they never won a penalty shootout in the World Cup, if I'm right. And to have that kind of record for these youngsters and kids to step into this penalty shootout was massive pressure. And I think a lot of what is being said in the press is now actually being reflected in this team. And it was really nice to watch. As in, I was really happy watching this.
All right. So that is where we are at. These are our 8 quarterfinalists. And time now, guys, to quickly preview the quarterfinals. So we'll begin with you, Vishal, the first 2 quarterfinals. And again, the first quarterfinal is probably the most delicious matchup of all. Uruguay facing France.
Yep. I think this is Didier Deschamps really needs to bring in his midfield into this game, because where France will win this game is the midfield. He has to bring in a Pogba, he has to bring in a Kante, and most importantly, he has to see, since Matuidi is missing, I'm missing out on suspension here, who else will step in his place? Because if it's down to forwards, Uruguay have the better forward line. If it's down to defence, Uruguay have the better defence. So France really need to figure out how they can boss midfield and really win this game. So it's going to be a real tactical battle, and it'll be really interesting. But I think France do start as slight favourites because of a simple all-round better 11 starting the game, and maybe they might have hit form at the right time. So France do start favourites, but this is such a close game to call. But I would say France will take this home in a very, very close game.
It could also depend on Cavani's fitness.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see how that plays
out. That's one of the biggest problems. Yeah.
All right. And of course, the second game, Vishal, is Brazil facing Belgium. We have been talking Brazil up a lot. We have been talking Belgium up a lot. We saw that Belgium delivered against France that would have given them immense confidence. Suddenly, yep. Now this battle becomes even more exciting than we would have thought about it on paper.
Yep. If you were to, you know, this is one of those games which is worthy of a final right now, because possibly two of the most consistent teams in terms of result in throughout the World Cup, and two teams who are picking up form. But the way Belgium turned the game around against Japan might have them buzzing. But at the same time, this Brazil team is showing a great balance of attack and defense and midfield. So it's going to be a very, very, I don't know as in how this game will pan out, but I think this is a game that will purely pan out on temperament. And I'm going to say that Brazil will hold out through the game, because Belgium definitely have more talent, but I think Brazil will push out and will pull a very close one. It might be one of those 3-2 or 2-1 type of games, but I think Brazil will pull it.
Or maybe even head to penalties, or at least extra time, because Belgium have a history with games like those at this stage in the competition. Speaking of extra time and penalties, Karan, Sweden versus England.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
Well, here's the thing. Sweden, like I've mentioned, have been extremely impressive, not just in the World Cup, but even leading up to the World Cup and the qualifiers. So it's been a case of them doing really well over the last couple of years. So they deserve to be where they are. And England, on the other hand, have really, you know, caught fire in recent times. So it's on a knife's edge, to be honest. And it could be the minutest of details that can probably decide this. But I probably going to go England, just probably edge it by the odd goal.
Yeah.
Well, it will be interesting to watch, because Gareth Southgate himself has already said that England historically haven't been that great against Sweden.
Yep.
Of course, Sweden are without Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who has been the destroyer-in-chief recent times for Sweden against England. We'll see how they cope. But again, Karan, you said England have caught fire. It's kind of a controversial statement to make, in the sense that England haven't exactly looked.
They haven't, but then the thing is, they haven't. I mean, I agree, they haven't looked completely impressive, but they've been getting the results. So, which is something that the England teams of the past have never been able to do, regardless of.
But my biggest worry about this England team is that so far this World Cup, they have not seemed to be able to play 90 minutes of football. They seem to have a good spell of 50 minutes or 60 minutes at max. And then they just seem to have a major drop in energy. So if they do that against Sweden, they will pay the price. That, which is my only concern this time. That because they need to play 90 minutes. They need to play 90 minutes to beat the Swedish team.
Sweden is a team designed to make you pay the price for those things.
Exactly.
And of course, eventually we are left with the last quarterfinal, which features the host Russia, who really did not... Nobody expected them to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, somebody who everybody expected to get there, and that's Croatia. Karan, your thoughts?
I think, the smart money would definitely be on Croatia to progress. But with Russia, what they pulled off against Spain, you know, with the backing of the home crowd, it could, again, you know, play into their favor. But I think this is as far as Russia can get.
Russia can go,
And I honestly feel that, you know, Croatia, after... the near banana skin that they kind of encountered in the previous round, they will get their act together and put in the performances that we know that they're capable of, because like I said, you know, they're a much better team than what they showed against Denmark.
All right. Absolutely. And we hope Russia put in the performance that they are expected to. All right, guys, final call, the expected four semi-finalists.
Oh, God.
In your book.
France, Brazil, England, Croatia.
France, Belgium, England, Croatia.
All right. And we'll see if there are any surprises among those. Of course, apart from Brazil and possibly France, the other favorites are already gone. So it gives that other side of the draw such a huge, huge chance for a first time final. Yep. I mean, even if England get there, it's a first time final in over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of the other teams get there, it's literally their first ever final. well, apart from Sweden, who again, we have to go back some 60 years to get there.
The last 10 days on the finals.
So... we'll see how that goes, and we'll of course bring you the review of this quarterfinals and the preview of the semifinals once we catch our breath back from these two games, I think. or these four games rather, if the last round has been any indication. In the meantime, you can find us on Audioboom. We are at audioboom.com/channel/soccerdesense, or you can catch us on any of the podcasts that you use, or visit our Twitter account at @SenseSoccer. In the meantime, that's all we have time for this episode of the World Cup special of Soccer Sense. This is Tariq signing off from London, along with Vishal.
See you guys.
And Karan.
Get some sleep, everyone.
Yes, it's only 7 p.m. London time, Karan.
We're going to need it.